The following is merely an idea. I claim little intellectual rigour in its derivation, but offer it as a catalyst for debate in the enduring quest to reconcile high art and pure science, a theme that has exercised me since the halcyon days of my youth. But it is my more recent induction into the world of glass that has revitalised my re-examining the connection from a sideways perspective, namely the skills involved in glassmaking, for which, of course, Stourbridge is famous. However, quod erat demonstrandum, this same principle may equally apply to other skills requiring a combination of cognitive and psychomotor abilities for which the Black Country is long renowned. A bold aim, but we cannot soar with the eagles on the wings of a wren. Allow me to get airborne. First, the key player. It was Bertrand Russell who suggested that numbers hold sway above the flux of life. Thus was it ever so, and our hero of the moment is the Italian mathematician Fibonacci, born around 1170 and dying around 1250, who, like Russell, was one of the finest minds of his day. His book, Liber Abaci, examined a system of Hindu-Arabic numbering that featured the astounding arrangement that came to be known by his name. It's said that he initially used the sequence to estimate the fastest rate at which rabbits could copulate, but it proved to have far wider corollaries. Here it is. Fibonacci numbers comprise a progression beginning with 0, then 1, and followed by the addition of each succeeding number to its predecessor, i.e. 0, 1, 1, which is 0 plus 1, 2, which is 1 plus 1, 3, which is 2 plus 1, 5, which is 3 plus 2, 8, 5 plus 3, 13, 8 plus 5, and so on ad infinitum. Now, remove the sums for clarity, and the sequence actually reads 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, 89, etc., etc. Et voila, here's the magic. In nature, the number of petals on many flowers is a Fibonacci number. There are numerous other instances of correlation to the extent that mathematician and philosopher Adolf Zeising, 1810 to 1876, proposed it as a universal law of nature. But this is merely the beginning. If the larger number is divided by the one preceding it, ignoring the first few until everything settles, the ratio steadies out at around 1.62. This has become known as the golden ratio, golden mean, or divine proportion, and even has its own mathematical symbol, the Greek letter phi. The ratio has been shown to be psychologically pleasing, in that it's a natural ratio that the eye coordinates to the brain. Thus, no surprise that its dimensions were deployed extensively throughout the Renaissance, and to this day, artists and photographers still use a Fibonacci ratio as the most popular shape of canvas or image. Yet it would be interesting to hear how many would be willing to quantify why, other than it just looks right. And still the elegant beauty of the Fibonacci sequence unfurls. Take the lowest number and create a square of one unit, then place it adjacent to another of the same. Below these, place a two-unit square, then build up the squares. The longer side of each square is the length of two successive Fibonaccis, and each square has sides that are Fibonaccis. The coup de grâce, describe a quarter circle in each of the squares, and behold the shape of numerous objets that occur in nature, from nautilus shells to broccoli florets and even the human ear. Now, let us hold this in abeyance as I turn to the 2012 Portland Vase Project, a magnificent initiative headed up by lifelong glassman Ian Dury to recreate this iconic piece of Roman cameo glass in Stourbridge. I was the official biographer for the venture and shadowed it throughout. Mere words are almost inadequate in capturing the sheer brilliance of master glassmaker Richard Golding as he started it all off by blowing the blanks. But I gave it my best shot when I wrote. I was transfixed, as with an efficiency of movement and a deftness of touch that redefined sublime, he slowly, resolutely enticed that amorphous gobbet of semi-liquid into a masterpiece of exquisiteness that would fain serve the gods themselves. This, dear reader, transcends mere talent. We were witnessing a gift that was nudging at the echelons of pure genius. Fast forward to May 2014, when I delivered a presentation on Stourbridge Glass in, of all places, Stourbridge. Following my talk, I was presented with a stunning glass bowl made by glass artiste Alistair Malcolm. It sits in pride of place at home, next to a couple of tumblers that he presented to me on a previous occasion. I was looking at them one morning, when I wondered if the patterns on Alistair's bowl could be a Fibonacci number. Intrigued, I annotated every dot and marking. And my findings? Absolutely nothing. No correlation whatsoever. I placed the bowl back next to the glasses and rued my fool's errand. Until, that is, I took another look at the glasses. The image of Sherlock Holmes admonishing his chronicler, "You see, Watson, but you do not observe," punctuated my thoughts as I made closer inspection of something I'd looked at 1,000 times but failed to observe. The walls in the bases resembled nautilus shells. Not exact, I confess, but near enough to rekindle my excitement as I scrabbled to find the telephone to ring Alistair. The burning question on my mind, was this something he had done deliberately and knowingly, or did it simply just look right? As the tone brrrred, I bet myself a tenner that Alistair would humour me, courteously, as some sort of crank. I lost. It transpired that Alistair had learnt about Fibonacci and the golden mean in his undergraduate days. It was not something he particularly explored, but he had found it a useful bookmark when ideas didn't quite look right by dint of being outside of what he felt was pleasing proportions. So, the acid question. Was the shape in the base of his glasses deliberate or unplanned? I never gave it a thought, he told me. It's just how I made them. But, now you come to mention it. I allude once more to Holmes when he remarks to Watson, "Art in the blood is liable to take the strangest forms." The quote is particularly prescient here, since art surely takes no stranger form than the ability to manipulate a blob of molten silica into a thing of exquisite beauty. But, in what amounts to a slant on the classic nature-nurture conundrum, how much of this is a gift nudging at the echelons of pure genius, or to what extent are such talents the consequence of a pragmatic rationale that is yet to be quantified? And this is the quintessence of my ruminations. If such talent is pragmatically quantifiable, then it can be expressed as a strand of logic represented by mathematical function. That being the case, it can be learnt. Ergo, if it can be learnt, it can be taught. Thus, by extraction, its teaching is not constrained by geography or timescale. The implications of communicating across divides by means of prescription and to store in retrieval systems for future generations that which we presently consider to be almost divine are awesome. Yet the broader principle is a valid one that's already employed routinely in the teaching of cognitive skills. Consider, for example, driving a motor car. The coordination in learning to control a car, ask any 17-year-old, is a formidable undertaking. The task is made the more palatable by breaking down the action of, say, changing gear into a series of steps whereby each step is represented by a succession of the simplest elements to which the task can be reduced. Master each element in sequence, then put them all together for the completed action. Hey presto, a crossover between cognitive and psychomotive behaviour, the condensing of basic motion elements into a series of thirblings, thus named by Frank Bunker Gilbreth, 1868 to 1924, a time and motion specialist who branded his brainchild by spelling his surname backwards. Broadly analogous to thirblings in terms of function, algorithms were propounded in ancient times by Euclid of Alexandria, but have been elevated in our consciousness more recently with the massive expansion in computer technology. Quite simply, an algorithm is a step-by-step procedure for data processing and the somewhat sinister-sounding automated reasoning that proceeds through a number of defined steps until its objective is attained. We are routinely subjected to algorithms, accessing a bank account, online purchasing, social media, all are based on increasingly powerful algorithms that were the stuff of wild imaginings just a few years ago. Moore's Law, named after Gordon E. Moore, who founded the Intel, that's Integrated Electronics Corporation, postulates that computing power increases exponentially by doubling approximately every 2 years. It is thus a plausible sequitur to postulate that it is merely a matter of time before psychomotor skills may similarly be represented by a formula as a function of automated reasoning. Now, I contend it's not a question of if, but when, and that the period it may take should be considered an incentive more than a deterrent. The Higgs boson particle, identified courtesy of the CERN Large Hadron Collider, was but a fantastical notion in the mind of David Higgs for over 40 years. Similarly, not quite there yet, but getting ever closer, is the unifying theory of everything that has exercised the likes of Stephen Hawking for generations. Watch this space. By these yardsticks, the formulation of an encryption founded on the principle of Fibonacci that may be primal to glassmaking and other cognitive psychomotor abilities would appear to be relatively small beer. Its discovery may ultimately be by someone who has Isaac Newton's providence to see further than others by standing on the shoulders of giants and simply popping the final piece into the jigsaw. Intriguing possibilities indeed. But, lying across the path of an insatiable quest for pure logic, I spy a Pandora's box that holds weighty issues of morality and ethics. Do we embrace such developments with the optimistic anticipation of Huxley's Brave New World, or do we rebuff them in trepidation as a nightmarishly Orwellian analogy of 1984? Ah, I see the cue to take my bow, for it will require far finer minds than mine to navigate through that one. In the meantime, casting science aside, I should continue to frequent the Stourbridge glass quarter and marvel at these virtuosos, for surely that is what they are, plying their mesmerizing art in time-honored fashion. Do join me there. I guarantee you'll be impressed.